This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to the McCovey Croncast, the greatest San Francisco Giants baseball podcast of all time. And now here are your hosts, McCoveyChronicles.com site contributors Brian Murphy, Doug Bruzzoni, and Sammy Higgins.
Sammy, the Giants won their first series of 2018, and I feel like this is cause for celebration. Woo! Boom, boom, boom. All right. Brandon Belt was the hero, basically, of the weekend series in Los Anaheim. And no Doug this week. Just get that out of the way real quick. It's Brian Murphy, Sammy Higgins. And we're going to cover. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we might as well call this one the Belt Cast, because Brandon Belt was basically the hero of the week.
That's right. I picked him a week too soon.
I picked him the right week.
That's right. We'll get to that a little bit later, but obviously the big story is that the Giants, again, won their first series of the season. 21 games in, 9-12. Hey, okay, guess we'll take it.
They did it against an actually good team that when they came into the series, the Angels were leading the American League West, and now they are not.
And they beat them. Continued like this because the Red Sox just pounded the Angels right before the Giants got there. The Giants beat them enough in such a way to call into question their hot start almost. the Angels, I think the consensus was that pitching is a huge question mark up and down. I don't think the Giants did too much to put it in the concern area. I mean, Garrett Richards handled them pretty well, and Heaney, they actually did a pretty solid job knocking around. But, you know, Barria, who was the pitcher yesterday, Juan Barria, right? Juan Barria, yeah.
No,
Jaime Barria, thank you. He was in absolute, the worst trouble you could be in as a pitcher. The Giants got him out of the game in the third inning, and he wasn't behind, and he'd barely given up much contact. But because Brandon Belt decided to run 21 pitches up, and they got 49 pitches in the first inning out of him, you know what, that pitcher was Jaime Barria. That was a very impressive outing for a 21-year-old pitcher. I think we should just say that that he got in such trouble.
Like it was funny as it was going on, but then as like it, you know, after Belt was out, and you're thinking about it, you're like, man, this poor kid. It's only his second major league start. And they ran up his pitch count in the first inning. I'm not going to say disrespectful, but it's just a little bit rude.
And, I mean, I guess we can't help it. We have to just talk about this 21 pitch at-bat that Brandon Belt had. Ends in a line-out, but Belt actually said after the game that the sun was just, it was making it hard to see the ball clearly. Well, I mean, I think he saw the ball pretty clearly.
And it reminded me, there was a piece, I don't know if it was on Friday, but I think I read it on Friday in the Chronicle from John Shea. And it talked about, you know, everyone should read it if you haven't, but it talked a lot about like kind of disproving a lot of the myths around Brandon Belt from all of the people on the other side of the Belt Wars. And it talked in there about how he does not swing out of the zone. Like that's just not something that he hits well. And I think if you go and look at the 21 pitches and where they were, like they were all in the strike zone except for the three he laid off of. So I kind of pretty much was a visual representation at that point.
It's basically his resume for what he's all about as a hitter. And I would say that not only were those pitches in the strike zone, what was interesting was the way that Barria was mixing the fastball and the slider, actually the curveball and the changeup, and Belt was able to just completely lay off the changeup. And he got fooled on a curveball, I think, for the second pitch. It was this only swing through of the at-bat. And after that, he was on that curveball. And then that fastball, he just couldn't quite square up. It looked like he was kind of swinging under it a little bit to foul it off. And then he was out in front on a lot of pitches that he kept hooking. And I really think that at-bat, it encapsulates what Brandon Belt's all about. But what I actually really saw in it, and I mean, honestly, I was not watching the game. This was a Sammy assigned game, and Sammy, you did a fantastic job with the recap. You're just covering the crap out of the Giants, all right? So, so thanks for that. But I was kind of watching basically through game day, and after about pitch 16 or 17, you know, I love Brandon Belt. I also look at baseball as baseball players are successful, but they fail a lot. And so in most pitcher-hitter battles, the pitcher is going to win. But what it came down to me at that point, once I got to pitch 16 or 17, was not like who wants it more or anything like that. It was just like, who's going to tire out first? And that's all it was about to me. And I think Brandon Belt, if anything, if that was five pitches earlier maybe, the swing he puts on what wound up being the final out probably goes farther. It's probably a home run. But
the fact that he did come back later in the game and hit a home run, I'm like, how? Is your arm dead?
Well, that's what I mean. He just needed a little more time to recharge, you know? If he maybe with the older pace of play, he might have been able to step out a little bit more, that kind of thing. But although Panic was on base, so they didn't have to actually play by the newer, faster rules. But, you know,
and thankfully, I don't think there were any outs at that point, because Panic would have just been, if it was like two outs, he'd have just been like sprinting back and forth.
That's right. I can't remember who pointed that out on Twitter. It might have been Baggerly, but you know, basically Joe Panic would have just died of exhaustion halfway between first and second around pitch number 16 or 17. But I mean, it's Brandon Belt is ostensibly, I can use that without sounding pretentious, ostensibly the second best hitter on the team. And we don't know what's going on with Buster Posey right now. It's fair to bring that up. And it could be an injury. It could be something like that. I tend to think it's something like something's nagging him. But when Buster Posey is not the best hitter on the team, there's no question that Brandon Belt is then therefore the best hitter on the team. And so it's always nuts to just, you know, the week that was, we're talking, this is the Belt cast. We should also just talk about, dude keeps getting benched.
Well, hold on. Before we get to that, can we go back in time just a little bit and talk about why he's the hero of the week for another reason? It's because he broke up the no-hitter.
He broke up the no-hitter. Yes, that was the... I would say if Brandon Belt is a character in a fictional story, that's what you write Brandon Belt to break up the no-hitter with. Brandon Belt did not... He swung at every pitch he saw that game. And the one pitch he tried to not swing at, he wound up check swinging for the hit that broke up the no-hitter. And I don't know, there's no better character in recent Giants memory in baseball that works best for. It's just funny. He wasn't trying to beat the shift, but he was also trying to remember the be aggressive approach that I guess... You know, because he kept getting benched this season. The Giants have played 21 games. He's been benched, what, four times?
At least four or five.
And so, you know, he's, all right, I got my chance. I know I got to be aggressive. I can't just be taking close pitches or strikes. I got to be swinging at him. And
and he overlearned that lesson.
Yes. And it wound up working out. So Brandon Belt has been not just the hero of the week. He's been the storyline of the week.
Right, and you would have thought that the storyline of the week, I mean, at least as of Friday, you would have thought the storyline would have been Mack Williamson, but we'll get to that, of course. But,
yes.
You know, and then Belt just is like, no, this is my week.
That's right. But it's hard to kind of talk about... it's hard to talk about him in any other way of sort of, this is what this Croncast, what the website has... It's basically been saying, like, this is what you get with Brandon Belt. You will have weeks like this. You will have 2 weeks like this, maybe even 3 weeks. Then you'll have two or three weeks where other people get the chance to, like, kind of stake their claim of he's not good at all. And I pointed out in my recap the other day that he has at-bats where I can totally see why people lose their freaking minds over that, is that going back to John Shea's article, absolutely, he has... he has at-bats where he doesn't give away strikes and he'll only swing at what's in the strike zone. But my contention was he'll take the borderline pitches, which is a great eye. But then he does clearly get fooled on pitches that are outside of the zone. So it doesn't, you know, and then it just looks like So then the argument for the couch guy watching on the couch is basically, how could you take that close pitch and then swing at that garbage? Which obviously it's, from Belt's perspective, it's looking like a strike. But my contention the other night was the pitch he hit a home run on was in the same relative location as pitches he's laid off of, and then the pitches he chased were in a completely different side of the plate. And that's where I'm like, okay, I get why people get upset. The numbers, though, should speak for themselves to some degree, and I think this is where I start to lose my mind with, what numbers are people looking at? Are they really only looking at home runs and RBIs still? Still? And the answer is yes. Undoubtedly. Unquestionably yes. So to those people I say, let's look at some other things. But first, before we do that, let's look at Mac Williamson's home run from Friday night.
Yes.
We should go back and talk about the Arizona series, but for the moment, the Angels series is fresh in the minds. It's the first series that the Giants won this year, and it was in no small part because the Giants finally figured out, they just finally chose to phantom DL Hunter Pence, which you said Mac Williamson should have probably been the story. I think it was that push-pull between Williamson and Pence, which if Belt hadn't sort of rode into prominence here, we'd be talking about that. We'd be going on another bit about how the Giants don't want to bench an inspirational, figurehead player. And Mac Williamson at this, the Giants scoring one or zero runs in 10 of their 18 games up to the weekend series, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, that's just when they were like, you know what, screw this. They lose 3-1 in Arizona. They scored five runs in three games in Arizona. And in four games in San Diego, they scored 13 runs and got outscored quite a bit as well. And yeah, at some point, it's just not sustainable. And Hunter Pence, you can look at his numbers, but if you don't even want to look at the numbers, which, again, the people who only count home runs and RBIs are very strange, because looking at strikeouts, that you're criticizing a guy who strikes out a lot, and then you don't look at the other players who strike out way more and don't do anything other than strike out. I mean, Hunter Pence is 22-2 strikeouts to walks. And so if you want to ignore that, okay, look at his at-bats. He looks completely overmatched, lost at the plate. I don't know what you want to call it. And I'm not ragging on the guy. I'm just saying the Giants gave it 3 weeks. Let's be fair to the Giants here, Sammy. Giants gave it 3 weeks.
That seems short, to be honest, given their history. But
it seems short given their history, absolutely. But I would say if we took a big, if all of us figured out a way to take a step back and said, this baseball team, for a guy who's in the last year of his deal, who's 35 years old, who means a lot to the spirit of the organization, they gave him 3 weeks to turn it around. That seems completely reasonable. And you also can't argue that Hunter Pence was the reason why the Giants have been so bad offensively, because he's not the only one.
Right.
So on all those terms, I was not that angry about it. What I would have been upset about was if they had called up Mac Williamson, he went 0-3 or 0-4 on Friday night, and then we don't see him again until he gets sent back down, and then he gets sent back down. That would have driven me nuts. So it's a great thing that Mac Williamson decided to hit a home run on Friday night. And I want to point out that this home run was impressive, not just because it was to the opposite field with a lot of juice on it, but that is a pitch that I think Hunter Pence is the only Giant before last season, let's say, but he's the only Giant on the roster who could have gotten to a pitch like that and hit it the way that Williamson hit it. And so the Giants have just been lacking in that dynamic hitter who's a power threat. I mean, the other night we saw Buster Posey was getting challenged on the outside corner, and he was just flying it out weakly to right field. I think it was Greinke who was pitching him away. And Buster just, if there's an injury or something going on, he just couldn't do anything with that. The ability to hit the ball to the opposite field is very important. I'm sure everyone knows this, because it challenges the pitcher. The pitcher's got to figure out a way to get you out now. And it's just been way too easy to get the Giants out. Coming into yesterday's game, 25% of the time the Giants strike out, which seems low.
Yeah, can we even talk about Saturday night where they struck out 17 times?
which is the first since they faced Sandy Koufax, no, Don Drysdale in 1959. That's the most they've had in a nine-inning game.
Yeah.
So 17 of their 27 outs were via the strikeout. And I don't think there's anyone who could sit there and say it's Brandon Belt's fault.
I mean, someone could. Yes. Someone could. You overestimate people.
Brandon Belt was not even playing that night?
He was. It was his Friday night that he had off.
That's right. There we go. Mack Williamson did not strike out in that game. It's important.
He was the only one.
Yes, he's the only one. And that was interesting because Garrett Richards really was just throwing, just overpowering them with fastballs and sliders right in the strike zone. So the week that was, again, struggling in Arizona, although I would say that the Giants had a really nice win on Wednesday night where they had to win in extra innings, but Brandon Belt hitting a monster home run to kind of give them the lead. That was a win that's the tough win that you look at and you go, okay, I see the good team in here. And I would say even the one hitter, as tough as that was, the fact that the Giants, I would say that's through 3 weeks, right, Sammy, that the theme has been, wow, they could be way worse.
Right. They went 500 this week. They won three. They lost three. I'll take it at this point. I mean, I think we're still kind of treading water until Bumgarner gets back, so.
The pitching, the fact that it's holding up at all is remarkable. It's just remarkable. Chris Stratton.
I was just going to mention that.
Chris Stratton has looked incredible since he was essentially a full-time starter last year. He's pitched in, I can't even remember what it was now. But, you know, he's had a 2.5 ERA, basically, or a 2.40 ERA in his last seven or eight starts going back to last year. And he's being more than what the Giants were expecting of him, more than what they asked of him, really. And it's quite impressive. I want to talk about Johnny Cueto in a second. But before we get into the pitching, before we get into the good stuff, because I want to talk about Cueto and Samardzija, both worthy of some conversation. One thing I really want to talk about for a second, I don't know if you guys saw this, if you're listening, but the other night, Hank Schulman tweeted out that Bruce Bochy was asked, and I believe Schulman was one of the people who asked, Bruce Bochy about leaving Derek Holland in to face the Angels order for a third time. Derek Holland, if you didn't know, was with the Texas Rangers for a long time. He faced the Angels a lot. Albert Pujols and Mike Trout all had good numbers against him. Who am I forgetting right now? There were three guys that really banged around Holland. Was it Kinsler?
It was Saturday night?
Yes.
So Trout homered. He homered in all three games. It was Pujols and, oh, God, it was my recap. Hold on.
It's all right. But the fact of the matter is that Derek Holland's in the game, and he's facing the Angels order for the third time. Now, you might say he's pitching well. This is like that's new school foo-foo stuff that you can ignore. What is the value in leaving Derek Holland, who is, to use the word again, ostensibly your fifth starter? What is the value of leaving him in to face the middle of the Angels order when you're trying to win a baseball game? I'm not understanding. I understand what it is. It's Bruce Bochy saying he looked good and I'm the manager and I know when to pull a pitcher. I don't need, because Bochy's, I think I got away from my own point. The question was asked, and Bochy was upset. And he was like, you guys are really hung up on this third time through the order thing. Well, we know in 3 weeks already, there's been three times at least. There might even be a fourth I can't even think of right now, where Bochy, the third time through, Bochy's been burned every time. I want to say it was in the opening series in L.A. it happened. And
it happened to Stratton. No. It happened to somebody else this week.
It might have been, okay, I think it was Stratton the opening weekend. And then that was more like the relievers then, but Stratton got into trouble to start it. So correct me if I'm wrong, or maybe we can't verify this, but as I recall, because it's not that deep into the season, Stratton in the opening series, and I believe, I'm going to say Ty Block in the opening day game against the Mariners. And then, yeah, you want to say Stratton from this past week, and then Holland. It's four times already. We might even be missing one.
I think it was, hold on, I'm sorry. I want to say it was, sorry, slow internet, but I want to say it was whoever was starting Wednesday's game got into trouble as well, but I can't remember who that was.
Well, we can work backwards from this. It was
quick. Yeah, I have slow internet connection. That's why it's slow to recollect.
Well, Stratton started on Wednesday. And okay. So Stratton, and I believe Stratton started the inning, and then that's where he gave up the run.
I want to say that, yeah. But even that wasn't that bad. But yeah, no, go back to your point. So you said...
Oh, but just the bigger point was simply that Bochy getting upset about you guys are getting hung up on the third time through the order thing, and I'm trying to save my bullpen. That was sort of the other part of it, that the bullpen had sort of been chewed up. Listen, that's a valid point, the second point, but here's the first point. You knew that was going to happen when you lost Samardzija and Bumgarner. So I don't know why that's an issue. Because
do they even really have anybody at this point who can function as a long reliever?
Not really.
Because they've kind of been leaning
on... Pierce Johnson?
Reyes Maranta, he did 2 innings the other day. He's been amazing, first of all.
We should talk about him some more. The pitching has been worthy of just talking about and marveling at. Maranta's gotten 2 innings, but so's Pierce Johnson.
So yeah,
they could between the two of them, it could just be a matchup situation. I know they'd love Josh Osich to be that 1 2/3 inning guy, but he can't even be a third of an inning guy at this point. Corey Guerin, I'm sure all these guys, they want to pitch multiple innings. Really, they can't. But yeah, I mean, they knew this was going to happen when they lost their top 2 of their starters. And so, I mean, on that level, what's the problem with that? Your bullpen's getting chewed up? Okay, well, that was to be expected.
Well, I guess maybe his larger point, if I can put words in his mouth, is that, like I said, they don't really have a long reliever guy. The bullpen has been getting chewed up, has been getting a lot of use, and has been having a shaky week. So, I mean, what are his options? Like, is he supposed to just put them in and hope for the best, even though... You know, at least in terms of the fans' eyes, they're probably less likely to get a favorable outcome. Or he can hope that the starting pitcher will, you know, come through and get it done. But, I mean, it's a 50-50 shot either way.
I think this week has finally crystallized for me is that you cannot parse his – you can't figure out his thought process. You can, actually, if you want to be deeply cynical. But, I mean, there's no consistency in what he's – and ever what he's done. So he is a from-the-gut guy. Because the third time through the order thing, he seems to be – to totally reject on both sides of the equation. Was it not this week that Belt was pulled for Nick Hundley to pinch hit? No, it was Joe Panic. Was this week. That was this week.
Yeah.
Joe Panic had walked against Robbie, not Robbie Ray.
No, it was
the other left-hander in the in the Arizona, Patrick Corbin.
There you go.
Yeah. And Panic had seen, I believe, the most pitches out of anyone. Had walked in his previous plate appearance and was going to be facing Corbin for the fourth time as he was nearing 100 pitches. Bruce Bochy decides, I'm going to pinch hit Joe Panic for Nick Hundley, who is a right-handed hitter and has been our best hitter since spring training. Right? That's the thinking in Bruce Bochy's mind.
You know, forgetting the fact that Joe Panic has two of his 3 home runs off of...
So, exactly. So he's ignoring... So he never ignores the book when he's making the lineup. But then he will when it's a lefty-righty matchup. And he'll throw away the turns to the order. He'll go with it. You know, he thought Nick Hundley was a better person in that situation than Joe Panic. I don't understand that.
I wrote an article about it, and I don't understand.
Yes, yeah, it doesn't make sense. It makes sense from an emotional standpoint, but to me, that sounds like the sign of someone who is entering his twilight. Because that is such the most dim feeling of the situation.
Brian, I'm gonna have to have you.
Are
walk.
You throwing a flag? Are you calling
I'm
the replay
on that one? Let's not make ageist jokes, please. Thanks.
I wonder if he's been doing it so much though that he has stopped thinking about thinking things through in quite the same way. And to be perfectly honest, it's kind of mind-numbing to think baseball thoughts through five steps ahead after a certain point. Doing it even for a year is exhausting. So doing it for as long as he has, maybe it's just annoying.
Well, and if you go, like, I went through, like, Nick Hundley does have better numbers against righties than Joe, not, I don't want to say than Joe Panic. Joe Panic, sorry, I'm backwards here. Okay. Nick Hundley has better numbers against lefties. Joe Panic has better numbers against righties. So I guess using that very base logic, like, if we're talking career numbers is what I was looking at the other night. But, I mean, you have to look at, like, more recent numbers as well. And so it just didn't back up. It didn't back up his lefties can't hit lefties mentality. And I just don't know how long he's going to stick with that, considering how many left-handed batters he has on his team.
Right. Well, I mean, again, he'll just... There is no consistency to what book he uses. He's not even consistent with the you hit a home run, you're in the lineup the next day.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Yes. Yes, let's talk about that.
Brandon Belt hit a home run on Wednesday. He hit a home run on Thursday. And when you hit a home run, you're supposed to play the next day. Except the next day, Brandon Belt was benched, and it was his birthday. And then he came back in the lineup on Saturday, hit a home run. Came back in the lineup on Sunday, hit a home run. What, is he going to get benched on Monday? Like...
In fairness to Bochy on that point, he didn't just do it to Belt, he did it to Longoria. Longoria homered, and then Sandoval was in the lineup. But mainly, there was like, Longoria, I think, was like his ankle was hurt or something. So it was like an extra reason for that.
There was a reason for that, unlike Belt, who just apparently has bad numbers on his birthday.
So there's a micro split that he's willing to pay attention to, which does it. So. I guess, you know what, let's just put this on the board to revisit, the storyline to revisit. Something could be going on in the dugout. There is a great comment by one of the McCovey Chronicle commenters that I want to point out. You know what, though, I feel like I got away from the larger point because we were talking about turns to the order. Well, no, it was pretty consistent. He seems to say, on one hand, Bochy seems to reject certain statistical ideas, but to me the third time through the order idea seems to be like, that's not an advanced stat, that's just counting. Like, that's not a mystical thing.
That's just something you notice.
Yeah, and so it, to me, it falls in the same line of like the guy who doesn't do well on his birthday. Like, why couldn't that argument be made for his mindset? Not an ageist thing, I'm talking about Brochi's mentality. So now I can tie it into my bigger thoughts. There is a commenter on McCovey Chronicles on Friday in the game thread named Tapokata. I'm saying it wrong. Tapokata. I don't know why I can't say it right. And the comment was that they said was pure projection and speculation on my part, so I am likely wrong. But in my opinion, Bochy is working with the coaching staff that he didn't pick, and outside of WOTUS, hasn't built up a relationship of trust. I get the feeling that the coaching staff is walking on eggshells around him and are content to let Bochy make all of the big decisions. Well, there's also Bam Bam, who's there as well, and Bam Bam's the bench coach now too. I like this idea because this seems to fit into what most of us can agree has some truth in human nature that would be hard to ignore. And as professional as anyone could be, I can't imagine. I guess what I'm getting at is we can imagine a scenario where it's as dark as this, but the more likely scenario is the Giants and Bochy came to an agreement on, like, here's who we're thinking. Here's the three guys we'd want. Who would you want out of these three? Or maybe it was like, Bochy, we need to make some changes. Who do you see? And then Bochy maybe named some names. Right, we could see that as being more amicable and happening in that sort of way. But even if that's happening, there's still going to be an air of like things are a little shaky for him, right? It's just different. And having to make these choices, even if he's given the choice, it's not a gun to his head, but it's simply the matter of like you have to change the way you do things a little bit. And so I like the idea because it makes sense to me that if you're bringing in Kurt Young, and you're bringing in Alonzo Powell, and you're publicly declaring we're going to be a little bit more advanced sabermetrically, and then someone says, you know, this third time through the order thing, I like the idea of petty passive-aggressive Boji picking his spots to just be like, I'm not doing that. he might agree with it, but to me, it tracks in some way of like, I'm still going to do things my way.
I was going to say, because this is a thing that isn't new to this season. I mean, he's had this same problem in other seasons as well.
Exactly. So it's in character.
So I see what you're saying. This is one thing he's not going to budge on.
So it becomes troublesome because it's entirely possible that some of the things that the Giants are doing that we don't obviously see are kind of working. I only say that because you have to admit it's a surprise, a positive and a negative for the Giants, which maybe gets us into one of our other topics before we get to the great pitching, revisit a topic. Two things are happening that are different this year. One, the Giants have no pitching to speak of, and yet somehow they are getting through each game and doing well. Is that the result of a new pitching coach and maybe a new way of approaching the game? I think it's possible. You could certainly draw a line from the Giants in the offseason saying we had a bad year and we're going to change up the coaching and our approach to try to make things better, and then bang, the next year things are better. You could draw a line from that. And then the other part of it is the Giants are striking out way more than they have in recent memory. Even for a team that has no hitters on their team, like a bunch of slappy guys, they're still striking out at a very high rate. They're not even making the contact they've traditionally made. And I don't know if that's based on approach or changes or scouting differently or seeing different things. I'm not sure of that. But I don't think what I'm getting at is those are all points in the idea of there are things that are different this year about the Giants team because they've changed some personnel in the clubhouse, in the organization, etc. So all that seems to fit to me of like, so Bochy could still publicly push back on some other things here and there. So maybe there are things that were always that things that he's not a micromanager, obviously. So there's just things that aren't in his control. And those are the things that are just being approached differently. And the things that are inside of his in his purview, essentially, hasn't changed much. That might be fair to say right now, because based on the evidence, that's certainly what it feels like.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But then now let's just cycle into one thing. I want to start with Samardzija, and then I'll go with Cueto. Samardzija looked like he was pitching carefully, but he also looked not in the hesitant, weak way. In the I'm not going to blow it all out because I'm both, one, trying to get back in the gear and a rhythm, Go ahead.
Oh, I said he only had one rehab start.
Exactly. I think he looked great. I think whatever he was doing, it looked like all of his pitches had some nice movement on there. I don't remember his fastball getting up to, like, did he break 94? I don't recall seeing that. I would say it's encouraging, and that's a really good lineup and to start to kind of make your season debut against them.
Right. Well, and I guess I was a little bit harsh in my recap talking about how he walked the bases loaded in the, the fifth inning? And I had somebody, let me find his username. It was on Twitter. It was Red Dawdin at Red D-A-W-D-D. And he pointed out the fact that apparently a lot of the balls were called in the strike zone. So some strikes that should have been, or some balls that were called balls that should have been called strikes worked against him.
Was that the Joe West night?
That was not.
That was Saturday night. With all the strikeouts. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
I think Samardzija pitched great. And I think that if that game had been played in July and Samardzija was on one of his like typical 4 or 5, 7 innings, you know, one home run, two home runs allowed, and like 9 strikeout rolls that he gets on. He comes in Anaheim, he goes 5 innings, he gives up 6 runs, he walks 3, strikes out 8, something like that. And we don't even think about it. You know what I mean? And so this is a time of the year right now where some people might still say the pitchers are ahead of the hitters, et cetera, et cetera. But the Angels have been putting up runs, and Samardzija was essentially he was making his first start of the season and really his second start in the last month.
Well, and
I
think just he was about 5 feet away from giving up a grand slam as well in the fifth inning, but it wouldn't have mattered. They won 8-1, but still, I mean, I thought that was kind of an interesting story because he gave up a grand slam in the first inning of his rehab start too.
Well, that's how I knew he was fine. Jeff Samardzija giving up home runs doesn't tell me anything about how good or bad he is. and he did not give up any home runs on Friday night. So to me, that's like, that was a win. So that's Samardzija. And I don't know, one start, it's hard to take. We've certainly taken one thing in this podcast and blown it out of proportion here. The Giants got one of their best starting pitchers back, and he had an encouraging first start against a tough team. There's going to be rough patches going forward until he gets into a rhythm, but just having him back on the team has got to be a huge boost. But let's get into what Johnny Cueto's doing, because it's really exciting.
It is, and can I say I'm really scared about his ankle?
Well, because it's essentially like he's like a boxer, right? He keeps getting punched where he was cut.
Right, and then he keeps making these very athletic plays. And I'm just like, don't do that. You're hurt. Well, I don't want you to get more hurt.
Well, Sammy, he is a professional athlete.
I understand that. But you know what I mean? Like, he had just...
Well, I mean, he's one of the elite athletes.
Earlier in Sunday's game, they had a mound visit to see because he, I guess, tweaked his injured ankle in throwing a pitch. And he said, he's fine. But then after that, he goes and makes a play at first base. And I'm just like, no, let the professionals do that. You're a pitcher. Don't hurt yourself.
I mean, he's all over the field. He's going left. He's going to the third base foul line, cutting off Brandon Crawford. But
he's just pitching. He's pitching so well. And I would just hate to see something silly, like not silly, but you know what I mean? Like, he's already injured on that ankle. And I don't believe for one second that he's 100% on the ankle, but he's pitching so well. I just hate to see him get sidelined because he goes to make some, you know, some heroic play that he didn't really need to make. But
well,
I'm here.
Maybe you remember this John Madden quote, or maybe not. But John Madden used to say, if guys played careful, like tried to not get hurt while playing, it would increase their chance. It always seemed like this is all his anecdotal old coaching stuff. But basically, if you're like trying not to get hurt, you'll get hurt. And it's the guys who just play free, coming back from an injury, is always what he meant. Then those are the guys who will just be fine. And obviously, if you're playing free and loose, you're still going to get still at an injury risk. And I would venture to guess that statistically, you're at the same level. For the most part, you're at the same level. If you've medically cleared to play, let's be very specific. If you've been medically cleared to play, your chances of re-injuring or getting injured are about the same. Statistically, if you're cleared of injury, that's all I meant. And yeah, so, you know,
that doesn't make me worry any less.
Sure, but at the same time, you know, if Johnny Cueto is playing like this, if this is the way if he has to play this way to pitch as well as he's been pitching, I mean, you got to just take it, and you just got to hope for the best, right? That's the thing with pitchers; it's a game of landmine or minesweeper. You don't know when you're going to click on the wrong square.
Yeah.
But just to put what he's done in perspective, he's had 4 starts this season already. And Giants pitchers with consecutive starts of 1 run or fewer to begin a season since 1958, so San Francisco Giants. Johnny Cueto is the newest on the list. He has 4.
He's who
do you think is on that list from this century?
Noah Lowry.
That is correct. Noah Lowry, 2004, which, man, I think a lot of people are still sad about how Noah Lowry's career went down. But that's the whole point of pitchers, right? One day, you never know.
The point of pitchers?
The point of pitchers are they break your heart because one day their arms just it just all ends. Juan Marichal, 1966, he had 5 to start the season, so he's the leader. What's Cueto's next start lined up to be?
What's the schedule?
It would be in LA. It would be LA.
Which one?
It would be the Friday night game.
Every
fifth day. So he would go Friday night, most likely. And then there's the doubleheader on Saturday. But Cueto, folks, if you're trying to understand what's going on here, you know, we have a stable of writers at McCovey Chronicles every week. We have the story break meeting, and I just put it out there today. I'm like, can someone write me an article breaking down Johnny Cueto's changeup? I swear to you, Sammy, that was not the same changeup he had when the Giants first got him. It is even better. That is a...
The way you asked for that, it made it sound like you were about to ask for Spider-Man pictures.
Yeah, it's how I felt when I wrote it. Somebody get me pictures of Johnny Quinto's change-up. And I had a cigar in my mouth and everything. But it is a cartoonish change-up, not in the Tim Lincecum way, because he's not throwing it where it's dropping out of the strike zone so much. It's when I'm watching it on TV, my impression is, it's either going from the top of the strike zone, dropping down to the bottom of the strike zone, or the middle of the strike zone, down to the bottom of the strike zone. And it seems to change the speed or break right when, basically, if the bat was about to hit the ball, it's as soon as the bat gets to that point, it just drops right underneath it.
So you're saying it's sentient?
I'm saying it is the perfect Johnny Cueto pitch because it's dancing and tricking you and it's having fun with you. But basically what I've seen, my impression of Johnny Cueto out of the gate is basically he's pitched all these games like he did against the Cubs in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
it's like
we knew he had it in him.
Well, okay, 2016, like the start of 2016 was a
yes.
That's where my mind goes, but that was a bigger sample size, and he shut out the Padres 3 times in a month in 2016.
He had a rough start against the Dodgers in that early going, and he stayed in the game and he kind of recovered and came back.
If I remember correctly, yeah.
But 4 starts in to look this great, and I think it's like did last year happen? So it's
Did you just say no and strike it from the record?
Right. So I don't know what's going on. It could be one of those coaching changes behind the scenes things that we may not know. It could just be his health and figuring out a way to work through the blister issue. Whatever it is, let's just all enjoy the fact that Johnny Cueto has been uniformly excellent to start the season and how big of a surprise the Giants pitching has been. We've talked about all the pitchers we like and all the pitchers we don't like. Tony Watson finally gave up a run, which I feel like I could have just made an entire emergency podcast around that.
Was that to Mike Trout, though? Because I feel like that doesn't count.
No, it was in Arizona where he finally gave up the run.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I believe it was a walk that he had that scored as well. And it almost prompted it. I started doing research for the article because it had felt like so far this season every walk the Giants had, because they're not like that high in the walk totals for Major League Baseball. So it just felt like everyone they had walked, like a high percentage of them had scored. And mm-hmm. That was actually not the case, but it certainly felt like it. Yeah. Go ahead.
And that was actually when I was discussing Samardzija, and that's why I kind of made note of the fact that he did kind of, you know, whether it was fair or not, but he did walk the bases loaded. And they had just mentioned earlier in the broadcast, I don't know if it was before the game or during the game, but they'd mentioned that his walk rate was so low last year compared to his strikeout rate. So then when he walked 3 in a row, I was just like, whoa, that doesn't seem right.
Well, he had a very, very strong stretch last season. If you go and look at the final numbers, you know, I'm surprised. He actually was basically a league average starter, maybe even a touch below. Which could put in the context how the rest of the league was. I'm not sure, but a lot of strong points from this week. I think the split week. All that said, the Diamondbacks are a great team. The Angels are a great team. I would say that the thing about the season that's really been disconcerting was just the Padres series, where essentially the Giants have played every team and have looked okay. And that was the only series where they looked really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to happen. And I would say that the Padres do get the exception of no matter how well the Giants seem to be doing, the Padres are this weird thorn in their side that we might be able to make an exception. I mean, the month's not over yet. We'll see what happens. The Nationals and the Dodgers are huge, huge, huge matchups to get through this week. Even though the Nationals are struggling, I believe both of those teams, and they're still playing as we record this, but I believe both of them are, the Dodgers are 9-10, and the Nationals also are 10-11. So the winner of the game that is going on as we record this, so Sunday Night Baseball, will get to 500.
I mean...
the game is over. I didn't even need that. The game is over. The Dodgers came back and won that game.
Wow, okay.
The Dodgers are 500 and the Nationals are below 500. So
you know, they're not quite the Dodgers and Nationals of yore, where they're at full capacity or full strength, I guess.
The Nationals will be throwing out Gio Gonzalez tomorrow, though, or tonight, though. So automatically, the Giants lineup is going to be different. It'd be funny if Brandon Belt doesn't play.
Not surprising, though.
Yeah, not surprising, yeah.
I mean, how many home runs does a guy got to hit before he gets to play every day?
Well, he's just a platoon player at that point, and that to me is where you start to get in the highly questionable nature of the decision.
Sorry, sidebar here. On, I believe it was Friday, if not Saturday, I believe Bochy said that he was not going to... And then, yeah, well, that didn't last long.
Oh, can you say that again? You cut out right there.
Oh, sorry. I said, I think if it wasn't Friday, then it was Saturday that Bruce Bochy said that his plan was not to platoon the Brandons. It's like, then what are you doing?
Well, Brandon Crawford has been struggling quite a bit, but I think, as I said last week, I don't know. I mean, obviously, if he's striking out as much as he has been, which he kind of is this week, was not a great week, you know, you're going to have to take some lumps there, because whoever you put in place of him on defense is a markdown.
Yeah.
And I think you're more likely to lose a game with him not there than with him in the lineup. I would say the thing about Brandon Crawford, and that's why this past weekend was a little surprising, is that he'll strike out, but he tends to work the count a little bit. And I think there was at least two times where he just went down on three pitches, mm-hmm. really with doing nothing. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But obviously it's something else to keep in mind. I want to touch on this before we go into the rest, until we finish off the show here, because we didn't mention it yet. We need to really say, you are anointing people with your picks, Sammy. Evan Longoria brought himself up to a league average player this week. So Evan Longoria having a really strong week behind the plate, or at the plate, and good on defense as we expected him to be, solid to above average. I would say, and some impressive hit home runs.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not dropping to a knee when he's striking out. Also, very, very impressive. So Longoria getting going, Belt getting going has been great, because I'm sure everyone's noticed Panic, Posey, they've all dropped off a little bit. And Andrew McCutchen has basically been persona non grata when he's not facing the Dodgers, which could be fine because they're facing the Dodgers this week.
Four times.
Yes, that's right. So let's take your Twitter questions. We've basically covered everything in our rundown here. So we've got your Twitter questions. We ask your Twitter questions every week on the Mick Croncast page on Twitter. Oh, I'm kind of running out of steam here. Now let's go. We have definitely one question that I have very strong. We're going to have to put a pin in it, answer for. But for now, let's go with the first question. I do want to point this out, because Doug tweeted at the account the other day. He said, I would like to apologize to all of Giants fandom for saying nice things about Hunter Strickland on the McCron cast. It won't happen again. It's obviously because Hunter Strickland blew the save in Arizona. He looked pretty shaky yesterday in the ninth inning in Anaheim. But I think, or I'm sorry, Los Angeles. But I think he's, that's to be expected. He's the fill-in closer. And at this point, I'm taking him over Sam Dyson, who I'm not sure I want to even put a baseball in the hands of at this point. In fairness to Sam Dyson, the Angels did not hit the ball so hard that it startled my cat, like in all of his other appearances this season, as soon as someone makes contact with one of his pitches. So maybe there's an improvement going on. I'm not sure. So the first question from Rob Hainer at Robert Hainer. How about we bubble wrap every Giants hitter like that kid from the movie Little Giants and then tell them to take one for the team? I mean it. Really lean into them, except for Buster Mac and Belt. Brandon doesn't need any help getting hit. So that one is we need to protect the players?
No, that sounds like we need to encourage the players to take hits by pitch.
Ah, just so they're not striking out or getting on base?
I guess I'm not for that at all. Like, we have too many players that take baseballs to the brain. Like, we just don't need to.
Well, here's the thing. The Giants, they're not getting pounded in. This isn't like Chase Utley where because he's...
No, he said really lean into it. So it's not like it's coming in at them. He's encouraging them to go for it and lean in and take pitches.
I think as we've seen, the Giants can get runners on base no problem. It's as soon as that happens.
As soon as they get to second base, then they forget how to
hit. It just shuts down.
Yeah.
And I just think in the spirit of Earth Day, which was yesterday now, if you're listening to this, we shouldn't bubble wrap. It's just plastic waste. So let's do the other Earth Day-ish question. And this one comes from Andrew Bader at Andrew_B_Bader. Asks, with Matt Cain's retirement, which Giants player has the largest carbon footprint? This makes me laugh because I want to know why he thinks Matt Cain has the largest carbon footprint.
Okay, no, but you remember during the drought that Matt Cain was fined for using too much. And so was Buster Posey, so my answer is Buster Posey.
I did not remember that at all. Buster Posey for sure, but can we think about this for just a second and see if any of the new people might come in there? Like Alonzo Powell was in Houston, right?
Uh-huh.
They don't care about conservation whatsoever. So do you think he brought like his big Texas like watering plans with him? That's a possibility. Or landscaping, how to cover a field. I mean, Buster's clearly the lead. But I still like to think about who else might have come in and maybe made a mess of things. Brandon Crawford, maybe that's what he's got on his mind half the time.
Well, he's from the Bay Area. I think he knows how to recycle.
All right, Buster Posey is the biggest polluter on the Giants.
Or maybe
you're,
not.
You heard it for nope, it's too
learned.
Late.
Okay. I was going to say, maybe he's learned from being publicly shamed.
I mean, those Toyota commercials, are Toyotas as fuel efficient as another car, as a Honda?
I'm sure some of them might be.
He's driving an SUV. He's definitely...
I'm not driving a Hummer, so...
At Jacobs707 Jacobs asks, how much better would Austin Slater do in center field than Ajax, in your opinions?
I mean, look, you can't get greedy and ask for two veterans to get like or Phantom DL. Wow, Phantom DL'd in 1 week.
I don't see Austin Jackson. Austin Jackson signed a 2-year deal.
And was it 2 years?
Yeah, I'm not sure that he's. I mean, he's looked pretty bad. There's no question.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure where we go with that. It's a good question.
Is Austin Slater tearing it up like Mac was? I think he's close, right?
He's doing well. The Giants have an interesting dilemma of they've had no outfielders, and now, in theory, Williamson, Shaw, Duggar, and Slater are all like Austin Slater is apparently playing well enough that he's getting time at first base, which is great for Brandon Belt. I love that they're just like first base because that's where you stash guys who can hit but can't do anything else. So I would say if I don't remember who's the better center fielder, but you know, Slater, did he play in center field at all when he was up last year? I thought he was just a corner guy. And Mac Williamson was the guy I thought was the center fielder, left fielder guy. That was my recollection.
Slater wasn't there for longer than a week.
He played more than a week.
Okay, I believe you, but everything was kind of a blur last year.
It was a blur of badness. Like, Chris Stratton's starts last season, I have absolutely no recollection of. So well, Austin Slater had 127 plate appearances last year.
Oh.
And he had a .339 on-base percentage. I would say, I'm going to check out these defensive
platoons. That's what I...
He didn't play any center field. He played left and right. And I knew he played the majority in left field. He had one game. He had three innings in center field. I would just say, in terms of Austin Jackson, I mean, I would say Blanco probably gets time in center, maybe.
Yeah, And
I would think they would even put McCutcheon back in center field for a day or two before they do anything like that. I mean, I don't see that happening, but Williamson can play center. Blanco can play center. Ducker obviously can play center. So that's obviously the thing that's sticking out there. But I just also think Austin Jackson, it's so strange. There's been so much focus this early season of, you know, the first week it was Longoria, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's moved right on the belt. And then
now it's on Crawford and Jackson, I guess.
I would say it kind of transmitted to Pence. Like, okay. are we officially on? Like, is there officially Crawford-Jackson talk?
Yeah, there's officially Crawford talk. I don't know that I've heard so much Jackson talk, but...
So I would say we all Giants fans need to take a chill pill.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I think at this point, we're all, even if you have your, if you're partisan and you hate Brandon Belt and you wish he was never a Giant, whatever your irrational, or let's just say extreme, I won't characterize it as irrational. You don't like the guy, you don't like this, you don't like that, fine. Can we at least acknowledge that for any fans of any team to every week have a new target when the whole offense is bad? It's not a good look for the fans.
So you're saying they should just focus on Brandon Belt?
Yes. Focus on the guy who's hitting all the home runs. That is perfect. That is exactly what fans should do.
Because he doesn't hit them when it counts.
I don't see Slater in center field. I mean, I named two other guys I think would get time before that. If, you know, we've already seen that this weekend. I mean, Austin Jackson, he played Friday, and he didn't play the other 2 days of the week.
Yeah.
Two games in the series. So, you know, and no one's talking about it because there's been other bad players on the team. So it's kind of tough to sit there and focus on one new guy every week. It's kind of exhausting.
Yeah.
I would say the problem with Austin Jackson is he's not working walks. He's getting a lot of pitches per plate appearance, I believe. Anyway, so this is why I wanted to focus on.
Well, and the fact that he can't catch balls that are coming right at him.
That's also a problem. Although he has made some good, he's made some better plays in center field than we saw all of last season.
It's true.
So David Sanchez at DMSJR1978 asks, three players Giants should be focusing on for an 18 draft. David, I know for a fact it's way too early to be talking about the draft. But
and I can say for a fact that I am somebody who has no idea how to answer that question.
Well, I know for a fact it's too early to check on the draft because just earlier this week, I remember clearly reading an article saying it's too early to focus on the draft. So, but it'll happen sooner than we think, obviously. And we'll be getting to that. Roger Munchell will come on and we need his expert.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would say at this point, it's the same thing with, you know, the Giants are going to take the best available. They're going to X, Y, and Z. And the Giants have their own way of dealing with the draft, too. So it's not just going to be like, this is the consensus guy who should be number two, or this is number one or number two. The Giants are going to pick the guy they think is number two, which is an entirely different thought process than anything else you're going to read. So, which is why we're going to bring Roger on, and we're going to do all that stuff. So thanks for your questions. Again, we'll take them at Mick Croncast. And let's review our picks to click.
Let's.
Who did Doug have? I can't remember.
Oh, I'll have to go back. This is what happens when you're not here, Doug.
Yeah. Well, Doug lost.
Yes.
I had Pablo Sandoval. That was a big loser. He certainly had opportunities, though. For sure he had the opportunities. He was in the moments where I thought he would be able to do something. So that could be a little disconcerting that now he's not even doing well in the limited time he's getting. Anyway, the big winner is Sammy.
Yes, let me read you a little bit about Brandon Belt this week. Brandon Belt broke up a no-hitter. He homered in four consecutive games that he was allowed to play in. And he has now the major league record for the most pitches in an at-bat. So if I didn't win, I don't know who did.
So you were asking, does that give you 2 points? No, that's not the spirit of what picks. You just won decisively.
I mean, but I got 2 points for Longoria getting it.
That's right. That's
hit.
Right, because I handicapped it, and I was like, okay. That's too far. But you clearly won.
Okay, so if I pick Brandon Crawford next week and he starts heating up, do I get 2 points?
No. I need to see – you need to pick someone who has as bad an opening week as Evan Longoria has. Like, Brandon Crawford is not killing the rallies.
He's 0 for 18.
He is very bad. Are you picking Brandon Crawford?
I'm picking Brandon Crawford.
All right. Listeners, Sammy is anointing people as we go along. She has anointed Evan Longoria. She's anointed Brandon Belt. She's now anointing Brandon Crawford. And that stardust, whatever you want to call it, the energy you're giving them, it's not just gone as soon as you leave them. Longoria's been playing well still.
I know.
All right, you've got Brandon Crawford.
And you?
I'm thinking about it. Well, you know, the Dodgers are back in town. The Nationals. I'm going to go with McCutcheon.
All right.
I mean, he can't be any worse than he's been.
Don't say that.
He's been really bad. Andrew McCutcheon has sneakily been... He's in the bottom third of the Giants hitters this whole season.
I mean, he had a good game on Sunday, I guess. I mean,
Joe Panic's scuffled of late.
I thought you were going to pick Joe Panic because the Dodgers were coming back to town.
No, I think Joe Panic's had a couple of equally large opportunities since then, and he's done fine. And I just think that there was a large element of luck for what happened. There's a tremendous amount of luck for what happened against the Dodgers. It'd be nice if he was a Dodger killer, and I would be fine with eating crow. I'm not saying he's not a Dodger killer. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to pick him because of that. I'm going to say he's struggling, and he might be okay. 4 games against him. I wonder if he's even going to play all 4 games. So that's going to be an interesting situation. Andy Suarez is probably going to come back up to make the one of the starts on the doubleheader day. And I'm wondering if the Giants are going to do some other sort of shenanigan to get another infielder up.
Now, yeah, how does that work? So they get one extra player, right?
And you get one extra player for the doubleheader, and it looks like it's going to be Suarez. But they could do something where they send, you know what I mean? Like, they send down right. another guy who they want to just leave down. There could just be something like that. So it'll be interesting to see. The Giants being more nimble on the transaction route, I think, is a good development for them. It's worth trying to see. You know, they're talking about this shuttle. It doesn't have to just be for pitchers.
Right. Well, can they make moves between those two games if they needed to? Like, if they needed to send down a bullpen guy, like, and they had somebody around?
I think that's what it is. I think that you're able to have an extra... So someone's going to be inactive. I don't think it's a 26-person roster for the second game.
They can't use somebody in the first game, but they can't use them in the next game.
Exactly. They can only be active for one... Like, or it's one of those... It's either that or they can... You can have up to 25 for either game, but you can have 26 players there. I believe that's what it is. Which is also what they've talked about with when the rosters expand to the 40-man, because people have been wanting to change that rule a little bit, saying like, okay, the rosters expand to 30, but you can all, you know, you can call up 40 players, but only 30 at any time could be eligible for a game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the same premise they use now with this extra man. For the doubleheaders, yeah. I'm excited to see Andy Suarez's second Major League start.
He didn't do bad in his first one. I don't want to pit him against Beattie, but he did better than Beattie in his one game, and then he immediately went right back down.
Well, like we said, Suarez had one of the best starts of a Giants pitcher in the 21st century. A call-up, first start. Very, very big caveat, obviously.
Right.
But he easily had one of the top three starts of a call-up, so very interesting to see what will happen. Dodgers offense has been, it's still not quite up to where it needs to be. I mean, once Justin Turner comes back, whenever that is, that'll be a big change. Matt Kemp's having a heck of a season, believe it or not. I'm saying the name Matt Kemp in 2018 and it's all good. So, you know, Andrew McCutcheon is better than Matt Kemp, I'd like to believe, so that's why I'm picking him. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. You can follow us at McCroncast. You can follow me, Brian Murphy, at Oh, at McCoveyCron. Remember that. And Sammy, where can they find you?
At Sammy Higgins. That's Sammy, S-A-M-I.
And please, if you're out there interacting with any of the players, particularly Brandon Belt or Evan Longoria, just let them know it was Sammy who did it.
Wait.
Yeah. Bye, everybody. Have a great week.